Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
It's time for us to turn our attention to Manchester United and what's going on with the push for the top four. It's going to be a nervy end to this whole situation, Andy Mitten, but it wouldn't be in keeping with the Manchester United season under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer if it didn't go right down to the wire.
No, I think most football fans will tell you that their team never does things the easy way, and United have been poorer in the last couple of weeks after a very good run where they've been unbeaten since January in that home defeat against Burnley, and there were a lot of encouraging signs and victories over teams like Manchester City a couple of times and Chelsea. But against Chelsea in the semi-final at Wembley on Sunday, United were poor and were knocked out the FA Cup. Drew against Southampton at Old Trafford last week, which was a bad result. And then another draw against West Ham, which bizarrely was a good result because it moved Manchester United up to third. It helped that Chelsea lost a team called Liverpool last night. And United have got one more game in the league. They need to avoid defeat at Leicester and they'll be in the Champions League. United have not been in the top four since mid-September. And while the performance was poor again against West Ham, United have done very well to get into that position. When you consider it in February, United were closer to the relegation positions than the third position. They were 6 points off the top four. They were 15 points behind Leicester. And they only had a goal difference of plus seven. It's now plus 28. So it has moved in the right direction, but I can't pretend that there's much positivity around at the moment.
Does Manchester United's fatigue levels concern you at all, Andy? Even down the line, it seems that they have tired sooner than Liverpool and Manchester City have done at the end of the season.
Every single season since 2013, United have finished poorly in the league. And I don't know the answer to that. I spoke to Ed Woodward in October, and he said it was a mental fatigue that had come with a change of manager. And at the start of this season, I spoke to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and throughout this season, and he's talked about the fitness levels being up, that the team have never been fitter. So it baffles me when, having had a rest because of the coronavirus and because of the lockdown and the break from matches, suddenly the team start looking as lethargic as they did do against West Ham. That said, they are the only team in the Premier League to be unbeaten since football has resumed. And United have got themselves into the top three. But yeah, against West Ham at home, United should have been vengeful. United were terrible at West Ham earlier on in the season. They got beat again away at West Ham. And you need to beat teams like West Ham at Old Trafford and Southampton at Old Trafford. Now, West Ham played well and Southampton played well too. United didn't play well. And the star players have faded pretty badly. So when we spoke a few weeks ago, we were praising Paul Pogba, Bruno Fernandes. They ripped Brighton apart in an away match. And those same players look very average. Now, Bruno's been a success. Footballers have bad games. They have bad months. They even have bad seasons. Not that there's a lot of patience around for that. But he was pretty poor against West Ham. Now, West Ham, I think, now four unbeaten. I think you have to credit David Moyes for the second time he's gone there and he's kept them up when they've been looking in a pretty desperate position. And I know it's fashionable among Man United fans to slaughter Moyes, but he's done well there twice.
It's interesting that over the last few weeks, Andy, we had started to put Manchester United into this conversation about when can they win the Premier League next. And I'm sure this is just a slump and this is not the norm, what they've shown over the last couple of games. But at the same time, even when they're on song, that attack, do you believe that they are a top two attack, that front three, even if you consider what Chelsea are going to do this summer, adding Kai Havertz to the Timo Werner signing? Are they a top three attack? Because this is the attack we've glorified over the last month.
No, I don't. And United, and I've spoken to Solskjaer about this, want to strengthen. And one of the positions they want to strengthen is on the right side up front. Of course, it's encouraging that Mason Greenwood's come into that position, but he's 18 years old. Invariably, team footballers are inconsistent. And what if he gets injured? What if one of the other players gets injured? Because Marcus Rashford was injured seriously in January and expected to miss the rest of the season. He was only helped by the break in football, and that's allowed him to come back. Odionigolo is an interesting one. I spent Sunday's game at Andy Cole's house, like you do, and he knows a lot more about strikers than I do. And he really rated Igalo. He said he brings something different. He makes runs which the other players do not make. Now, he's only at United until the end of this year. But I'm told that it is the intent of the club to sign another attacking player. And I think that's right today. If you look at the great Manchester United sides, they've always had at least four strikers and a lot of competition for those places. Now, it seems that Igalo, he's not getting minutes. He's not scored a Premier League game. He's played in the Europa League. It's as if Oli sees him as a backup. And he was brought in as a backup, and he was brought in because Rashford was injured. So I think another addition up front will definitely help. I can't really see a future for other forward-minded players like Jesse Lingard at Manchester United. So I think you're going to see the club try and sign two or three players, one of whom will be an attacker in the close season.
That makes a lot of sense. To be honest, it feels to me like the amount of games they played in such a short period of time has exposed that the squad at the top end is brilliant, but there's no real depth to it. And I would argue that that's what's happened over the last two or three games, where they didn't have the strength and depth to be able to go into an FA Cup semi-final and rest some of their players with an eye on what's coming in the rest of it. Can I just ask about De Gea before we go any further? How serious a threat was there to him, actually, from Solskjaer's perspective? Did he give significant consideration to dropping him last night, do you think?
I think he thought about it and spoke to his coaches about David, which is normally part of his job to do that. And obviously he's been concerned and the coaches have been concerned, but I don't think he was ever going to drop him. Obviously, if he keeps making mistakes, he would have to drop him. But maybe learning from Ferguson that when De Gea was under real pressure, even more than the last couple of weeks, back at the start of 2012, Ferguson persevered with him. And he told his dressing room, I'm going to carry on playing this lad until he gets better because he's very talented. And some of the senior players couldn't understand that at the time, but Ferguson was right. I don't think De Gea's just become a bad goalkeeper. He's built up a lot of credit for what he's done in the past. Yes, he's made high-profile mistakes this season. It's not good enough. He's not going to come close to becoming the player of the year this year. I do think he needs more competition. There's been a change of goalkeeping coaches as well at Old Trafford. And it's a bit of a problem in so much as if he gets his form back, great. And he went through 400 games last week. And if he carries on playing all the time, he's going to be a top five Manchester United all-time appearance maker. But he's the most expensive goalkeeper in the world in terms of his wage. Nobody is going to sign him. Nobody could afford him. Nobody. There's no point if you're Real Madrid or Barcelona in matching those wages, because David at the moment is not the best goalkeeper in the world. His stock in Spain is low. It's been low for 3 or 4 years now after a couple of bad international tournaments. So this isn't 2015 where Real Madrid really wanted him and David wanted to go to Real Madrid. I'm glad that Solskjaer stuck with him. I thought he did okay last night. I do think he's a good goalkeeper. I don't think he helps himself by doing absolutely no media. I think it's not a bad thing to have a couple of allies in the media. And David does absolutely almost nothing. And maybe I'm speaking as a journalist because I've spoke to basically every single Manchester United player. I can even speak David's language and there's just no interest there in any sort of communication with the media. And when things are difficult, maybe you need some allies. And I do think he'll be okay, but it's an issue. And of course, you've got Dean Henderson, who's done very well at Sheffield United. But then Dean Henderson's made mistakes as well. There's an element of the grass always being greener here. David's not had a terrible season, but he has made too many mistakes.
Yeah, in some ways, if they want to retain any value in the asset, they have to play him and hope that he gets back to form. Because, as you say, no one's going to take that. No one's going to pay a transfer fee at the moment, and no one's going to take those salary requirements off the wage book. In terms of who they might strengthen with over the course of the summer, how much of a budget will they actually have, do you think, Andy? Because it seems like the market is actually a little bit more buoyant than we thought it might be, given that there are no fans in the stadiums at the moment.
Yeah, I don't have an exact number. All I know is that United feel they're in a better position than a lot of rival clubs. But United have been burning £25 million per month during the lockdown. They've been very, very good with the staff. They've paid not just the full-time members of staff, they paid the casual workers, they didn't put the staff onto furlough. And I know lots of people who work at the club and I've not had a single negative from the way that the club has treated them. It's not just about how much United have got to sign players. There are other factors here. If, for example, Alexis Sanchez was to leave for money, or his wages were to get off the wage bill, if Phil Jones was to go, if Jesse Lingard was to go, if Marcus Rocco, this is unlikely because he's playing in Argentina where the football economy is nothing like it is in the Premier League. But if some of these wages could be moved off, then that would help Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. If you look back in recent years, United have been spending around £50 million per close season on players. I do think that they would have serious money to go for someone like Jadon Sancho. I don't think it would be anything like what Borussia Dortmund would be expecting. But Borussia Dortmund, there must be some realism at their end as well. There's no Barcelona around to pay £110 million like they did for Ousmane Dembele. The economies of football have definitely changed. It's clear. There's no fans allowed into the stadium. Every club has taken a hit. And what Dortmund will have is a diminishing asset because Sancho's contract is starting to run down. And if Sancho doesn't come, and I'd like him to because I think he's brilliant and I think he's needed, United have got option B, they've got option C, they've got option D. They've got all these different options. And Ole Gunnar has said that he wants to strengthen the team. And it's up to the executives around him and the people helping him with his football decisions to help bring those players in. I do know that Ollie's been doing background checks on players and he's very good at that. And he wants the right type of personalities to come into Old Trafford. That are not being signed because they've got a big name on the whim of an agent calling up at the last minute to say he's available.
Is the background check something that might, for example, derail a potential pursuit of Jack Grealish?
Yeah, I'm not privy to the conversation about Jack Grealish, but looking at it from an outsider, Jack Grealish hasn't helped himself, has he? He helped himself at Old Trafford by playing really well for Aston Villa, but then when he was seen getting out of his car at whatever time it was in the morning with one flip-flop on and one slipper on, that doesn't look good. Manchester United don't like that type of thing. And it's up for the club to weigh up the personality and the past and the background of the players. They're really interested in family and the type of personality. And when I spoke to Solskjaer during the lockdown, he gave that wonderful quote, I'd rather have a hole in the team than an arsehole. Or asshole, depends on how you interpret it. So you can't go saying that and then sign someone who's made lots of different errors. But I do think Grealish is a decent player. Don't think he played very well against United a couple of weeks ago.
Just last one for me, Andy. Which was your favourite trophy celebration last night, Leeds or Liverpool?
Both of them passed me by. I didn't watch either of them. I am glad that Leeds United are back in the Premier League because I'd rather wake up with the prospect of Manchester United playing Leeds United and a little trip over to Leeds. Liverpool, yeah, I mean, I can joke and do what you might expect me to do, but they've been the best team by a mile this season and they've set the benchmark, and it's for teams like Manchester United to catch up with Liverpool. That are current English, European and world champions. You probably see how much it delights me to say that. But they deserve it. They've got a brilliant manager. And, you know, as a rival, you always look for chinks in their armour. And United fans have joked about an asterisk being by their league title or even when the staff were put on furlough. Or I've written articles chiding Liverpool for their "this means more" as though it somehow means more if you're a fan of Liverpool than any other football club in the world. But they've got a brilliant team, and United did very well against Liverpool at Old Trafford, but there cannot be the type of gap between United and Liverpool next season that has been this season.
Andy, we're out of time, but I never ask you for this, but give me a prediction. Are Manchester United going to be playing Champions League football next season?
Yes. Just.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting final day of the season. Great to talk to you, Andy. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.